Now, for our first interview tonight, we're joined by two experts on either side of a spectrum. Over the next 25 minutes, we'll be talking about whether using pornography can ever be harmful and whether it's possible for a person to become addicted to porn. We're joined by Lee, who is a member of Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous. It's lovely to welcome Lee back to studio. Always lovely having you in.
Hey, Sarah. Thanks so much for having me once again.
Thank you, thank you. And Dr. Eve, who you will know, of course, as a well-renowned sex therapist, who says that actually there's no such thing as sex addiction. Dr. Eve, welcome. Lovely to have you back on the show.
Hi, Sarah Jane. Nice to be with you.
Good stuff, good stuff. Lee, I'm going to start with you, and we've spoken about this before, but just talk a little bit about your experience as now a recovering sex addict, but before you found recovery with SLA.
Well, I mean, I struggled with many years of addiction, you know, regardless of whether it was alcohol or drugs. And, you know, I always had a tendency to kind of tap into things that were always destructive for me. And I think that was just in my nature. You know, some people like to use the word illness as or disease for addiction. I've got a long history of basically trying to escape myself, you know, because of my low self-esteem. And you know, we can bring genetics into it or whatever the case is. I used drugs and alcohol for years and years and years. And, you know, porn kind of played a big part in that as well, because I think I had such low self-esteem and I didn't know how to interact with people, you know, and I struggled with intimacy. So I always found it easier to, you know, instead of facing a rejection from a woman, I'd find it easier to just isolate with a machine and watch porn for hours, you know, as opposed to sitting with feelings. Yeah.
Can you talk, and you spoke about your other addictions there and drug and alcohol addiction. And can you talk about how they interwoven in terms of the same kind of high or element of escapism that you're trying to achieve with using a certain thing?
Well, sure. I think you know, there was a famous quote by one of the world-renowned therapists saying that the greatest self-soother of all time is masturbation, you know. And I think what you know, drugs and alcohol is so similar to, well, for me, from my experience, is that it was just an amazing way for me to escape, you know. Whether it was porn and masturbation or sleeping with someone else or, you know, visiting prostitutes. So the feelings that came with that were almost exactly the same, whether it was drugs and alcohol, the feelings that I was trying to escape, whether it was boredom, shame, guilt, and the behaviors were for me exactly the same. You know, I'd lie to protect my addiction. You know, I'd manipulate. I wasn't honest with myself. So for me, like the behavior and the feelings were almost like parallel. So, I mean, it's for me, addiction is addiction. Yeah.
Is there any doubt in your mind that you are a sex addict?
Not in the slightest.
And just talk to us quick. I spoke to you about this when I think you were here about a year ago.
Yes.
And we were talking about the misconceptions around what people assume a sex addict to be, or what their behavior might be.
Well, I mean, there's been quite a bit of growth in the last couple of years around, you know, the word sex addiction. I mean, there's still a giant stigma attached to it, because I think the perception, especially in the mainstream media and the world we live in, that it's very sleazy and it's very, you know, it's just sleeping with as many people as you can.
Because you love sex. So
exactly,
much.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's not really about that. Well, in my case and loads of people that I've met, you know, it's got nothing to do with that. You know, when you're watching porn or you're masturbating or, you know, there's different types of sex addiction, you know, whether it's fantasy, paid for sex, exhibitionism. So there's a whole bunch of types of different sex addiction, you know.
Yeah.
And I think there'll always be a stigma, but I think the work of Dr. Patrick Kahn has really, really changed that. And that's sort of the work that I tap into, and that's really, really changed my life. And a lot of treatment centers are actually sort of shifting their focus a lot more towards process addictions, whether it's food, eating disorders, gambling, codependency. I mean, I've met people who've gone to treatment for gaming addictions. So I think it has been quite a shift, but for me, like, I find my purpose is to just spread the message of recovery, you know?
Yeah. I want to talk about recovery in a little bit, but I also want to talk about what impact your sex addiction, your porn addiction had on your life and on those around you. But I do want to bring Dr. Eve in at this point. Dr. Eve, as I say, lovely to have you with us again. Thanks so much for joining us. You are well documented as saying, and I've listened to many interviews that you've done with Eusebius, that you don't believe in sex addiction, or you don't think it's a thing. Why is that?
Well, it's not just my belief. When I say I don't believe, I talk as a clinician and somebody who does research and follows evidence-based medicine. And based on the classification system of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, we certainly do not have enough evidence to prove that there is such a thing as sex addiction. So it isn't in the DSM-5, which came out in 2013, and doesn't look as if it's going to be in the next DSM whenever that will come out. So in order for anything to be classified as addiction, it needs to meet a certain amount of criteria. And the sex addiction just didn't meet those criteria at all. So therefore, we have taken a I belong to the American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors and Therapists, and we've taken a very strong position on the fact that we absolutely deny the term sex addiction, and we also will dismiss anybody from our ranks. We will demerit anybody who actually practices whatever form of sex addiction they claim will cure whatever they name as sex addiction. So when people will present with so-called sex addiction, what I as a clinician will be looking for is other kinds of traumas, other kinds of pathologies that are driving behavior, which manifests the sexual behavior. It's incredibly stigmatizing and harmful to call somebody a sex addict. So I would rather be looking at the brain of this person and wondering what kind of trauma that brain has experienced, that brain is seeking out, as Lena says, some kind of solace, some kind of healing and relief from feelings which are really uncomfortable. And oftentimes those are very out of control feelings. And the only way that a person can feel relief from the feelings, escape from the feelings, is through certain behaviors, and one of those behaviors would be viewing of pornography and perhaps other sexual, out of control sexual behavior for them. So I do completely reject the notion of sex addiction. What kind of treatment is there? They've taken the 12-step program and kind of adapted it for the same as what works for alcoholics, and there isn't even any evidence around that, but there's good enough narrative that shows that it really works. But we can't ethically take that program and transpose it onto people who really suffer with out-of-control sexual behavior, which is what we call it. It just doesn't work. There's no real treatment for it.
So how do you explain the millions of people, let's say, who likely go into SLA or SAA meetings every day across the world? What is it, if they're terming themselves sex addicts, what do you think actually is the issue? Because I think it's interesting how Lee talks about the cross addiction there, because presumably you wouldn't deny that people can be addicted to drugs and alcohol.
Definitely. There's a different parts of the brain that are affected, and there's genetics and familial history around that. I mean, there's different evidence around that. So we can't compare. But, you know, at the end of the day, what research is showing, whether it is drugs, alcohol, sex, out-of-control behavior, with as he mentioned, gambling, what it's all about, what most of this behavior is about, is that there is underlying it all childhood trauma. So the way that we work is by addressing, and I do this routinely every day, by addressing the actual, what we call developmental trauma disorder, the underlying trauma that came from childhood. And I'm sure, I'm not going to ask Lee, but if you ask many of the people that hang out in those places, you will find that a lot of their behavior is driven by an underlying childhood developmental trauma, which could be either abandonment, neglect, or some kind of emotional, physical, or sexual abuse that they endured from a very young age. So we know this, you know, there's enough research that indicate that. And because of that trauma, there's a lot of out-of-control behavior that happens to people. And out-of-control behavior will be manifested in excessive pondering to try and ease and escape feelings that are there because of the trauma. So the interventions and the treatment is working with that trauma, not working or pathologizing somebody as a sex addict and putting them into the same genre as other kinds of addictions. It really, really pathologizes sexuality, and it really it hinders their sexuality.
Do you feel that it hinders your sexuality, Lee?
No, not at all. And I respect your opinion, Doctor, but for me, and I totally agree, I think like in any addiction, it's all based on childhood trauma, and I completely agree with that. Mm. But I had to find another way of, I had to find a way of how to deal with my situation at the time. So I needed help, you know, and the first thing I did was tap into the 12 steps, and that fundamentally changed my life. I'd been doing the 12 steps for a couple of years with drugs and alcohol, and I applied it to my sex addiction, and I did a lot of work with Dr. Patrick Kahn. So I mean that's kind of my journey.
I could literally talk about is it isn't it all evening. I do want to read a couple of messages that we've got coming in, but I do want to focus on pornography. Lee, that was an element of your addiction. I'm going to call it an addiction because I do believe in sex addiction. But Dr. Eve obviously is an expert on how pornography can affect one's relationship.
Sure.
Sue's message in, hey SJ, good topic. Would they strip the professionals of the ranks if they say that sex and porn is an addiction? Doesn't sound lekker, says Sue. And another message in from Anonymous saying, so what about someone who does nothing but watch porn all day long and craves it, if not watching or viewing it? An addiction is an addiction. As I said, we could talk about addiction, not addiction for until the cows come home, but I want to focus on pornography. And if I could go to you, Dr. Eve, you must deal with people, and you must have had couples come in who said, you know, one member of a couple, I'm at my wit's end, the pornography is taking over our relationship.
So, you know, let's not badmouth or give porn the bad rap, just like we shouldn't be giving sex a bad rap, because part of the treatment is looking at how to develop what we call sexual health models, sexual health value systems. So pornography is not the bad person over here. It's just the way that people are using it.
Sure.
And it's always about, I am feeling so out of control. I'm feeling so out of control. I'm feeling so anxious. I am feeling so stressed or so depressed or so, as Lee was saying, bored, mad, bad, sad, hungry, lonely, that I am looking for anything to relieve me of the feelings. And one of the easily accessible places that can be relieved is through sitting in a place alone with your privacy online, and just happens to be that you're watching porn. It kind of happens to be that. It's not because people are feeling excessively horny or that they're so-called addicted to sex that they can't have enough sex or masturbation or sexual activity. It's the feelings which are so out of control. And what it does by sitting in front of the screen and observing the acting of sexual acts, watching other people being sexual, it just soothes the brain. It just brings the brain into a place of quietness. It's an escape. And masturbation, the orgasmic feeling of masturbation, brings a sense of relief from those feelings for a little while. But if you're not dealing with the core problem, those feelings are going to come back again and again. And so people are just driven back online again to get the same soothing experience and escape from those feelings, which are so problematic. So it's not the porn that's a problem. And it's not that they're seeking sex, whether it's with sex workers or multiple partners. It's not the sex per se. It's just the escape from the incredibly difficult, really, really painful emotions that they feel. And this just offers a relief for a little while.
So with that in mind, and you said that, you know, that the porn isn't the problem in and of itself. It's the what it's being used for and the way that it's being used. First of all, there will be people out there who are listening who say, you know, my partner and I, or I on my own, or whoever, we use pornography in our relationship as part of our sexual relationship, and it's not a problem. And then there will be other people who are listening in who say, you know, I actually would prefer to not have sex with my partner and to use pornography.
Exactly.
For whatever reason. And Lee spoke about mm-hmm. intimacy issues. And I know that that's a really mm-hmm. common thread, mm-hmm. Not just with sex addicts, but with addicts in anyway. I think probably with all of us. I don't think any of us are particularly great at intimacy. So how do you know, or if you're presented with a couple or a relationship situation, how do you know when it's become problematic? What are the warning signs, as opposed to, let's say, me saying to my partner, I just don't like that you watch porn?
Yeah, exactly. There's so many elements that you've raised which are important, Sarah Jane. I mean, most people are what we call recreational viewers. And the second large category is people who are newly found. They suddenly find that they're online and they can actually access porn, and they'll spend a lot of time exploring because they're just really curious. I mean, we're kind of curious by nature. And this whole world opens up for them, and they begin exploring themselves and their own sexuality in a healthy way, in a curious way. But the problem comes when they get found out because they've kept it secret from a partner, and that's what causes the devastation. So it's also, you know, very much about security in the relationship, attachment, jealousy, feeling commitment, comparisons that women particularly go through looking at other women. And it's just also oftentimes a reflection on their own sexuality, which they feel isn't good enough, or what's going on in their own relationship isn't exciting enough. Men will often, who are not in any way out of control with their behavior, turn to porn. And in times, as Lee has described, in times of stress, in times of real needing to escape, and keeping it a secret causes the problem because it's considered to be untraceable and it's considered to be cyber cheating. And that's what causes more of the problem than the actual porn. You know, there are many advantages to porn as well, which, you know, we can talk about if you want to. But it's not everybody. The majority of people are just recreational users. Then just to pick up on the other comment that you made, you know, why is it easier for people to do what they are doing, which is just coming home and downloading a bit of porn and masturbating and then going upstairs and say, you know, honey, I'm home. Why are they not choosing to be sexual with a partner? And this is women as well. This is not just men. This is, you know, absolutely women as well who are choosing masturbation and porn over partner sex. And the reality of it is that it's incredibly difficult to negotiate partner sex. It's time consuming, it's difficult, there's tension, there's anxiety, there isn't an expectation of reward, you feel out of control of the situation. And so it's way more easy just to take care of it by yourself. Also, there's a lot of people, too many people, who really hide their true erotic natures from their partners. So if they have a kink or a fetish, they don't share it with their partner, and they'll go online and enjoy it alone, and then not have very erotic sexual activity with their own partners. So you have a lot of different complex threads to this.
Thanks, Dr. Evely. I want to go back to you, if we can. Can you talk about your experience, particularly with pornography? Mm. When were you introduced to pornography?
Probably at about the age of 11.
Sure.
Through magazines and, you know, before the internet.
Yeah.
yeah, so, I mean, my journey with porn is that I believe 100% I was completely addicted to it. I couldn't go for a couple of hours without it, just like I could with my drugs, or I couldn't with my drugs. And for me, I've always seen addiction as a progression. So, you know, my drug of choice got a lot harder the older I got and the more I used, and the porn that I used got a lot darker as well.
Yeah.
And the porn had just as much of an effect in my life in terms of unmanageability as the drugs did, you know?
When you say the porn got harder, was that because what you had previously been watching no longer stimulated you to the same extent and you needed something more?
Absolutely. I think my arousal template started to shift, you know? And, so something that I'd watched maybe 2 years ago would do nothing for me. You know, so I'd have to get into darker stuff and stuff that was, you know, kind of pushing the boundaries, you know, just for me to get that high.
Yeah.
You know?
And when you're doing that, when you're watching that pornography, I'm assuming that you're not sitting there having a great time.
No, it was awful. It was shameful. My behavior was shocking. You know, I didn't know how to communicate with people. Also, what happened is I was married once a couple of years ago, and I was clean off drugs and alcohol for a while, and I was clean off my inner circle behaviors of my acting out, and I was very unhappy in my relationship. So I knew I couldn't use drugs again. So I started watching porn to escape, you know. But over time, you know, the porn affected me so badly that I couldn't. You know, I couldn't sleep with my wife without relying on the images to be aroused, right. You know. So instead of, you know, dealing with that guilt and shame around the imagery in my head while having sex, I started to abstain from having sex with my wife because I was trying to avoid the guilt and shame. So I became sexually anorexic.
Sure. Yeah.
That was a whole nother level.
Talk to us about, and I've heard this many, many times before about the sexual anorexia coming. And also talk to me a little bit about the dynamic with your wife. Presumably she didn't know. Or not to the extent?
Yeah, and I agree with the doctor. I mean, it's you know, the porn isn't the problem. You know, just like cocaine wasn't my problem.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm the problem.
Me too. Yeah, exactly.
You know, I'm the problem. It's not the substance. It's not the porn. It's not the content. But my wife was in recovery. You know, and she knew that I was you know, dealing with sex addiction and you know, romance addiction, if you want to call it that. So we had a very open relationship, you know, but there were times, I think, when I started, you know, watching porn again and I started acting out and voyeuring and all of that stuff, then I started to keep secrets again, you know. So I didn't give a full disclosure. Which is always a very, very tricky, very, very tricky topic.
Secrets keep you sick, they say.
Yeah, that sort of thing, you know. But because of my behavior and because I wasn't completely honest and, you know, it kind of just all fell apart, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the porn and the acting art have completely destroyed my marriage.
If you are just joining us, we are joined this evening by two experts on either end of a spectrum. You will know, of course, Dr. Eve, who usually talks to Eusebius in the morning, but she stayed up late and is chatting to us. And for that, we are very, very grateful. And we're also joined by Lee, who is a member of Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous. And we're talking about the impact that pornography can have on a relationship. Maybe that you would, there's something that you'd like to share. Maybe you're in this situation now. Maybe your partner uses pornography and you're not comfortable with it. Or maybe you feel your partner is using excessively. Or maybe you feel that you are using pornography excessively. You can get in touch with us on the open line 021 446 0567. There's no need to give your real name, and this is a safe space. The SMS line is 31567. The WhatsApp is 0725671567. I want to ask you, Dr. Eve, as Lee was explaining is that a very common thing, that what previously somebody would have been aroused by simply isn't stimuli enough over time?
So let's just normalize it as well, Sarah Jane. You know, think about anyone who's been in a relationship for a period of time. They get pretty bored with the routine stuff that they do as well. You know, that's something I hear regularly in my therapy room. But they don't really have access to other bodies unless they decide to introduce another body. So they just also find that they want to explore and stretch themselves because they have curiosity. So it may start with, you know, bringing in a sex toy, and that's kind of fun, and then they watch porn together. And then they decide, well, you know, let's bring the third person, or let's go to a swingers club, or then let's open up our relationship. So people are seeking all the time to expand their sexuality. Online with porn, it's just easier because you have such a huge choice that you curiously can go and seek for whatever you're looking for and keep being more and more curious until something just, you know, piques your interest, and you'll go on there, and then it's like, oh, I really didn't know I was interested in that. That really kind of got me wet or hard. And then you'll keep looking at that image. But, you know, I get uncomfortable when I hear Lee, because it sounds as if it's dark. And, you know, he uses the word dark. I mean, sexuality is not dark. It's only harmful to you if you find that it's harming you, but sexuality per se is not harmful. You know, if one looks at images which society has deemed to be dark, I mean, you know, what is that? Who's labeling that? I don't want people to feel shameful. You know, if we look at what people are looking at, men, heterosexual men are looking obviously at youth and young and teenagers, and men are looking at other men's penises because they're comparing. Women are looking at women having sex with women, but in real life they wouldn't really be doing that. You know, is that is that dark? I don't know, you know, what dark would be. And maybe, you know, for Lee and for each one of us to decide what feels harmful to us, which is why the intervention is we get people to look at, you know, what would be defined in their value system as sexually healthy. What would be good? You know, I don't want people to be shaming themselves because they look at trannies online. It's just something that we shouldn't be. If we remove the shame, the stigma goes, and then there's less acting out behavior. So, you know, I do a lot of work to try and remove shame from people's lives and rather own and claim what sexually arouses them, or how do we normalize for them their own sexuality rather than comparing it to a standard of what society says is normal, because that's what brings shame and therefore more out of control feelings and an urge to spend more time online.
I want to just go to the WhatsApps. An SMS has come in. If Dr. Eve knew the lows that I've stooped to, total addiction and my mind being dominated by sex, and more importantly, the prelude to online sex, maybe she would change her perception of it as an addiction. I put it all at risk. Definitely an addiction and not sanity. Lee, I want to... Yes. We've got just a few... Gosh, we've raced through. We never have enough time. I just want to talk to you a little bit about... what your sexual template and your sexual behavior looks like now in about 1 minute. If you can sum up your recovery in 1 minute.
Okay, so basically my goal that I've reached, and it's a goal of maintenance, is healthy intimacy. So it's healthy intimacy with myself. I don't put a bad name on sex. I think sex is one of the most fundamental elements to connecting to God and connecting to another human being spiritually. That's not what I'm saying. So I'm in a place now where my end goal is true intimacy with another human being. And that's abstinence from porn. And that's for me, you know. I know some people can use porn successfully. That's
absolutely
great. That's awesome. But I can't, because I know the damage that it caused me. So I just have to maintain an open, honest relationship with myself and anyone I get involved in, and just carry on that with that true intimacy, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Dr. Eve, if we can have the final word from you, if we may, sure. If I may. How important, if we're talking about pornography in the context of a relationship, if there are people listening in now who are thinking, I need to talk to my partner, how key is communication?
Yeah, absolutely, because the thing that kills any relationship is secrecy. And
just carry on that with that true intimacy, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Dr. Eve, if we can have the final word from you, if we may, sure. If I may. How important, if we're talking about pornography in the context of a relationship, if there are people listening in now who are thinking, I need to talk to my partner, how key is communication?
Yeah, absolutely, because the thing that kills any relationship is secrecy. And if you're watching porn in secret and hiding it from your partner, that causes so much pain, so much distrust, and that more than the porn becomes the issue, you know. And then I'm always more interested in, like, why do people need to keep this secret? What is it they feel shameful over? What can't they talk to their partner about their own sexuality? So, yeah, people who are listening, please talk about porn in an open way, without judgment.
I'd just like to thank my guests for this segment, sex therapist Dr. Eve. When are you back on with Eusebius, Dr. Eve, just to give
on
people
Friday.
A heads up? On Friday.
Friday.
Hurrah. Good. Yeah. Okay. So on Friday. And thanks always to Lee, who is always available to us to come and talk about SLA and your recovery. And thank you for always speaking so openly and so candidly.
Thanks for having me.